Thanks for listening to the Get Over Yourself podcast, brought to you by Carol Fit Stationary Bike Program, 8-minute workouts to get super fit. Perfect Keto, the cleanest, highest potency ketone supplements. MOFO, male optimization formula with organs to boost testosterone. Let's get checked at home testing kits. Try LGC.com. Almost Heaven, beautiful compact home use sauna kits. Brad's macadamia masterpiece, the mind-blowing nut butter blend. And check out bradkearns.com/shop, my personal selection of favorite products for health, fitness, and peak performance. And here we go with the show.
I had people that were just really doing the standard American diet, and it's interesting that they think that they were eating healthy. I mean, even to this day, people that come to me and they're like, I eat pretty healthy, and then they rattle off what they eat when I ask them what does a typical day look like, and there's nothing in there that's healthy. There is a right way to do vegetarian, but not everybody's doing it right. I call them carbitarians. They're just eating carbs. They're not doing, you know, your B12, and they're not doing all the supplementation that they need to do it the right way. I'm not all about raw, but there are some things in there that you should have raw just to get more of a benefit of the nutrients, you know, like the oysters. If you can do like sushi, that's great.
It's a masterpiece. It's a masterpiece. Hey, this is going to be one of my favorite commercials because I get to introduce you to the delicious, nutritious, life-changing Brad's Macadamia Masterpiece. This is a mind-blowing nut butter blend that will soon ascend to your number one go-to snack, treat, or accoutrement for anything from dark chocolate, a cucumber celery smear, or mixed in with yogurt, oatmeal, cheesecake, or with a spoon right into your mouth, heading south. Let me tell you what I created in my kitchen through whirlwind experimentation and extreme sampling to my VIP product testing crew across the nation so far with 100% approval. In this beautiful jar, we have macadamia nuts, walnuts, cashews, the rare and precious coconut butter, coconut flakes, cacao nibs, real ancient sea salt, and organic MCT oil. Every single ingredient has been sourced to origin to be the very best we could find from around the world for the absolute highest purity and nutritional value. We run this product in small batches with a boutique family business in the Pacific Northwest, and everything is cold pressed to preserve nutritional value. So if you like eating healthy, it's a dream come true for all those who are keto, primal, paleo, and vegan, vegetarian too. I come in peace, my global healthy living friends. Masterpiece, that is. Try some now and it will change your life. I promise. If you don't like it, send it back to me. I'll eat it. You can order Brad's Macadamia Masterpiece on Amazon. Simple, simple. Or if you're bold, daring, and adventurous, buy 3 and get a bottle free at bradventures.com. Buy 6 and we'll send you 8. Christmas shopping early instead of late at bradventures.com. Check it out, Brad's Macadamia Masterpiece. Hey, listeners, we have a very interesting show coming up with Kate Willette Kretzinger, all the way over in New England, the beautiful state of New Hampshire. And she is a nutrition coach, and as you will find out, an extreme athlete who did an amazing endurance feat of riding her bicycle 220-something miles over the course of 2 days on the road, riding from the Canadian border all the way to Massachusetts through the beautiful state of Vermont on Highway 100. And guess what? She did it without eating anything during her bike ride. Absolutely mind-blowing. And this was to celebrate her 1-year anniversary of adhering to the carnivore diet. And she has landed upon this thing on a wild and wacky journey where she tested all kinds of things over many, many years' time to try to heal leaky gut. And her background is a vegetarian. So she really did explore all the nuances of healthy eating, landed on this thing, tried it out with her daughter, an amazing healing story from her daughter. So I think you're going to love this background of a real person fighting the battle in real life with real clients and with the great success of her carnivore experiment. She also provides some awesome insights of this hierarchy of nutritious foods in the carnivore realm, starting with raw oysters number one and going all the way down the rankings. And so sorry, people, but chicken and turkey are at the bottom, man. So you're going to hear about a ranking for the first time for me. Very interesting. And then also toward the end, we're going to detail the incredible journey of her two-day bicycle challenge across the great state of Vermont. So enjoy this wonderful show and go check out the K84 Wellness Podcast. I am an honored guest. We had a great show together. And so now here we get to learn more from Kate Willette Kretzinger. Kate Willette Kretzinger, we are back on. And I say that because I want people to go listen to your podcast, K84 Wellness. We had a great show with me as the guest. Yeah. And, you know, these little tidbits come out of what you've been doing with your life this summer here in 2020. And I am blown away. So I am so honored to talk to a real athlete on this show. In case anybody's tired of listening to me blabbing about this and that, now we're going to throw down. And I think the teaser here is that you rode your bike 200 miles, which is mind-blowing. But I think we should also celebrate your anniversary and talk about the dietary transformation that started a year ago. And if you want, since I'm giving you the floor now, maybe you can introduce yourself, tell us about your work, and then we'll flow right into this.
Ah, sounds great. Thank you for having me on. And yes, the show that we did together, always, every time we have you on, there's so much information that we talk about and cover. But thank you for having me here to share my story. I'm a nutrition coach, and I basically just help people to make it very simple to change the way that they eat, just to help them thrive instead of just surviving, because I find that most humans are just surviving. They're not thriving. And we do that online. So it's pretty simple. Like, I do it individually or in groups. And I also help people just, if it's not just nutrition, we also look at exercising and cardio and things along those lines as well, just to live a healthy life. And whatever that means for people, sometimes it's spirituality we have to look at. Sometimes it's just finding that joy again. So,
yeah. So curiously, we hear about nutrition coaches, health coaches now. It's a burgeoning industry. And there's also the, not to be confused with the classically trained nutritionist or registered dietitian, where you go to school and you get a degree in the four food groups and the grain-based diet. So as a nutrition coach, I know there's resources that are designed to train you. But of course, you have your personal bent, and a lot of them are in the ancestral health scene. So how does that look for you? How do you call yourself a nutrition coach? And what kind of bias or background do you bring to the table, really?
Yeah, absolutely. So I went to a school called University of New England, and they are a DO school. So they're an osteopathic school. So they have a lot of already holistic views on things. And when I went to school there, I did physical therapy. I started with physical therapy classes and ended up moving into exercise science. And the reason why I did that is because I was a single mom raising two kids, working full-time job and going to school full-time. And I couldn't drop into doing, half of my PT classes during the school year and half during the summer. The dean was just like, no, I can't do that for you. I'd have to do it for everybody. So I ended up just going down into exercise science, which was perfect anyway. It ended up being great. So I had a lot of nutrition classes there. And that kind of opened my eyes in the University of New England. And so we had many, many discussions about the food pyramid and how it wasn't healthy, and which was kind of interesting because at that time it was really taboo because we didn't, most of us didn't speak against that. And it was 20 years ago when I was in college. So that kind of got me really interested in doing nutrition. It opened up my eyes. I myself was not healthy. I had a sick childhood. I was always on antibiotics. Made myself, as I was growing up, had a lot of gut issues. And that's when it kind of opened my eyes a little bit there. So I decided to eat healthy. And it was healthier than most Americans, but it still had a lot of carbs because I was a vegetarian. So I still had a lot of carbs, but I stuck with the rice and, thinking that was healthier. Had a lot of beans, that kind of stuff. So stuff that still made you feel gassy and bloaty, right? So fast forward, and as I want to say about 8 years ago, so late 30s, I realized that I still wasn't where I needed to be, and I was actually going downhill, not progressing. And so that's when I found vegetarian keto. And when I did that, that's when I started looking more into the nutrition through integrative nutrition, the Institute for Integrative Nutrition. And they had a lot of, you know, ways and that you could approach nutrition. And that's what I needed, because I knew it wasn't a one size fits all at the time. And I knew that when I was in college. But it was just finding where you could get all those resources was tough at the time. And so since IIN came out, you guys have a nice program. Mark Sisson has a nice program. And so there's things out there now that is not the normal, you know, nutrition classes that you can take. So there's a lot of, and there's a lot of people that you can actually learn from too, just by doing some kind of shadowing, going to visit, reading their books. Now we have an awesome world wide web where we can get anything. So yeah, I think there's a lot more at our fingertips now than before.
So Institute of Integrative Nutrition, IIN, this pretty prominent online course, I believe that they expose you to different factions of the movement. Like you'll have a module on paleo or keto and all that. So you're not getting pigeonholed, and you're able to meet the needs of the client who might have, some restrictions coming in. Like, I am a vegan, don't talk me out of it, but help me eat healthier, that kind of thing.
Yes, exactly. And that's exactly what we did. And we were very lucky. That's where I met Mark Sisson, was through that, because he did a course through there. And he opened my eyes to, he had such a compelling story. I was like, there's something about this paleo, there's something about this keto that he was really, you know, talking about. And so that basically changed my life. And I was like, well, you know, if that's changing me, there's people out there that are going to need the same kind of advice, that don't have access or don't even think about going to IIN. I went there to heal myself, and then I ended up changing it into helping others. And that we all go there for different reasons, whether it's a loved one, whether it's ourselves, I started doing workshops, nutrition workshops at my husband's office. And I was like, oh, okay. You know, this is something I love. This is something that I want to do.
What kind of office?
He's a chiropractor.
Oh, nice. Yeah. All right.
So, and he's into the paleo, he's into all that stuff too. So it just worked out perfect where he could just, you know, focus on the chiropractic portion of things, and I could do the nutrition. And so that's when I started getting some clients from his patients, and then it just kind of grew from there, which was really fun. It was fun to see what it's evolved to.
So when you're talking to a group of chiropractic patients, that's not necessarily, that's possibly a cross-section of the community. Some people are in there because of their car accident, neck pain. And what kind of presentation did you see in your New England area? And what were the people eating like when they came to see you?
Oh, it's so bad. Like, I feel like New England is so behind the times. I really do. Especially with the way I'm eating now, people look at me like I have, 10 heads. Like, you're doing what? But I think that we're just so far behind the times that I had people that were just really doing the standard American diet. And it's interesting that they think that they were eating healthy. I mean, even to this day, people that come to me and they're like, I eat pretty healthy. And then they rattle off what they eat when I ask them, what does a typical day look like? And there's nothing in there that's healthy. And it just blows my mind that people are still thinking that way.
Well, the magazine ad in Shape Magazine or the internet commercial is aligned with what they're doing. They're reaching for their power bar instead of the Snicker bar, and so they're on the healthy path. And oh my goodness, yeah, it's a long way to go, but I think we're inching in that direction as a society in general.
Yeah, I agree. I'm seeing a lot more people accepting keto, and they're like, oh, isn't ketosis bad? Isn't that mean that, you know, you've like, no, that's totally different than the diabetic, you know, diagnosis. Because they think that, you know, it's in the urine and all that, you're secreting the sugar in the urine. I was like, no, ketoacidosis. I was like, no, it's not that. So it's just really educating the people. And I that's what I strive for. And I love doing is just getting the knowledge out there as much as I can. And I love being that vessel for that, and which brings on why I did the 200 miles, which we're going to get to eventually. But I just love having that information and more tools in my belt to help the people that are out there.
Yes, before we get on the bike and pedal away, I'm so fascinated by your passing comment when you said, I was eating the rice and beans and you know, gas and bloating. And you know, that's been, raise your hand, listener, if that's been part of your life since day one. And of course it has for me. And when I was a triathlete, you know, we were consuming so many calories during the course of the day. And so the digestive tract was always traumatized because I'd only eaten an hour and 30 minutes prior. And then I was in the swimming pool and burping and having all kinds of, you know, ongoing abdominal distress, which I came to consider as a normal everyday part of life, especially the gas and the bloating and, you know, don't get behind this guy on the trail run because you know, you stink up the whole nature. And it was just funny and, you know, just routine. But, you know, then I just made an Instagram post recently about how I stopped making my super nutrition raw vegetable green smoothie in the morning, which I published on YouTube for everyone to see 3 years ago. But, you know, I was getting my stomach blown up every single time I drank that thing. And it wasn't horrible. Sometimes it was worse than others. And I'd have little transient pains of being like, ow, and I'd have to sit down or hang upside down on my special contraption. And then I was talking to a friend of mine and he's, you know, he made this smoothie too. And he said, yeah, I get stomach pain as well every time, but it's so healthy that it's worth it. And that thing, you know, stopped me in my tracks because if something's healthy, should we experience gas, bloating, transient abdominal pain after consuming it? And, you know, then we can sit back, take a deep breath and open ourselves up to a whole new perspective. And it sounds like, I don't know, tell me about your transition from the vegetarian eating the rice and beans to vegetarian keto. And how do you pull off vegetarian keto, by the way?
lots of avocados and olives. one of my clients bought me a shirt that said, I'm an avocado holic. It was just so bad, that I would have at least five or six of those a day. I ate so many olives. But yeah, the transition from the vegetarian to vegetarian keto, first off, I did Gerson's therapy, which is all about juicing. I did like eight juices a day. And I, like you, had the same issues. And I was still running. I was still doing CrossFit. I was still rock climbing, all of the stuff that I normally would do. And I just chalked it off as that's how it was going to have to be, was the gas and the bloating. That was normal. And then when I went vegetarian keto, what I noticed with that was it was more, I felt lighter, you know, like as that inflammation leaves your body, you don't necessarily lose the weight, but you feel thinner, you feel lighter. That happened. And I also got a lot of brain clarity because of all the fats that I had added in. I was one of those that was always eating low fat, no fat before keto. And so, you know, do that with a lot of the rice and the beans that doesn't have a whole lot of nutrient content in it, then you can really imagine where my brain was at. To top it all off, I was only getting 4 hours of sleep a night. And I had done that. I know.
Why?
I'm still around, right? Because I was a single mom. I worked full time, went to school full time. I only had 4 hours of sleep, you know, and that was just what I had to do. I honestly don't remember most of my college. I remember waking up, literally waking up in one of my classes, just coming to, and I said, oh my goodness, did I drop the kids off at daycare? That to me was like scary.
Red flag.
Yeah. And so I ended up moving closer to the school, you know, like I just kind of made some changes that way, but still, you know, I could only get 4 or 5 hours of sleep just because of the schedule. I had to put a roof over their head and pay for the food. You know, someone had to do that. So, so I really didn't get much sleep, but that kind of carried on even after I was done with college. Just my body was just used to that. And I was one of those people that would brag about it too. Like, you know, I only get 4 hours of sleep. I did this. I went hiking. I worked a full shift. I went home, slept for 2 hours, went for a hike, hiked like three mountains. And, you know, I mean, it was just normal. My body just kind of adapted to it. It's amazing what it will do. So when I started doing the keto vegetarian, that's when a lot of stuff started opening for me. So my brain got really clear I started sleeping 6 hours, which was huge.
Wow. Before.
Which was huge before. And not only that, I had a lot of like internal healing. I had to do like mental internal healing. It's like, okay, what are you running for? What are you running from? What are you, why can't you stop and be with yourself for a moment? You're always on the go. So a lot of that stuff kind of came to a head when I went keto.
And so, why do you say so? What's the correlation?
I believe it's all connected. And I believe that when you get rid of that inflammation in your head, it opens the possibilities to other things too. Or it could also be you start feeling good and you're noticing you're feeling really well, but you're not feeling well in these certain spots, in these certain areas. You start paying attention to the stuff that's going on in your head and the things that you're saying and the stories you're talking about yourself, you know, the bad self-talk, all of that stuff just started coming together all at once.
Yeah. I can reference like being immersed in extreme training regimen as a pro triathlete and living and breathing this stuff. You have so much sympathetic stimulation, right? Fight or flight all day long that you kind of default into that way of existence. And so, you know, I remember like getting off the bike after an 80-mile ride and getting the stack of mail and reading that one of my sponsors was deciding to screw me or something and getting all amped up and calling and having a contentious conversation and just being constantly pumped up and jacked up rather than leading a balanced life. And I think there's probably a lot of people that can reference this in other realms, like their high pressure career at the law firm. And then, you know, they spun out. Finally, I talked to a lot of females, especially who have that complete endocrine breakdown from going and going and going, probably fueling it with a, you know, high carbohydrate, you know, high insulin producing diet. And sounds like you got yourself reined in just in time, really.
I believe I did because I knew I was going downhill significantly. And I'm just thankful that even that was right about the time that I met David too. So it was perfect timing because he's all, like I said, he was all about paleo and doing everything naturally and taking care of your body. And he always taught his patients the 7 pillars of health, all of that stuff. So it was kind of it also helped being around that. He turned me on to listening to Bruce Lipman and to Greg Braden and, you know, Mike Dooley and all of those guys. So that, you know, I believe when we're open to hearing these things, we actually hear them. So it was, that is what started my journey 8 years ago, was going keto and working on all aspects of my life.
Wait, 8 years ago, there was no keto. What are you talking about?
Yeah, and I had no idea it was keto.
Is this backdating? This was the Kate diet, which is now backdated to be called keto?
Yes. It was so funny because I didn't realize I was doing keto because I just was adding more fat. But as the time went on, I was like, oh, okay, this is exactly what I'm doing. Taking out the grains and adding more fat. So,
But you were still vegetarian.
I was.
Right. Okay.
Yeah. So when I was doing that, I call myself vegetarian because I would eat meat or eggs, like eggs I'd have a severe reaction to. So it was, if I didn't care how I felt, I'd eat them. But I would have probably burger, you know, a handful times of the year. I wouldn't have, and when I had it, it had to be cooked, like burnt. It had to be cooked all the way through. It couldn't be pink. It couldn't be the shape of a burger. It had to be broken up. I mean, it was so bad. It was the texture that I didn't like. So I didn't eat meat because of the texture. It wasn't because of ethical reasons or anything like that. So I'd eat it a couple times. And when I found out that when I felt my body was craving it, was right around my cycle. So that's when I would eat it. Surprise, surprise, right? So knowing what we know now about female health, you know, red meat is what we need to be eating if we want to get rid of any of our PMS stuff. So you can only imagine how I was during my cycle or leading up to that. It was horrendous. I mean, the bad thoughts in my head, how quickly I would get angry at people. Some of that did subside when I went keto, but when I added more fats, but it was still there. It still lingered. But I just kept working on it. I kept working on the internal stuff and, you know, thoughts become things, that kind of stuff. So I started working on that, and it was a hard work, hard to keep changing those thoughts. But when I changed the way I'm eating now, it's not hard work anymore. So it just lets me know that a lot of the nutrition that we eat does affect our brain. And as we know, you know, the nutrition that we eat also affects our hormones, which start in our gut. And so there was a lot of stuff going on there. I mean, there's a lot of topics to uncover along that. But the biggest thing was healing the gut is what I had to do. And that in doing that, that was a journey in of itself. So, you know, learning what vegetables caused more distress, in my stomach. So a lot of the high lectin stuff I ended up taking out. So the beans came out. Then, you know, I would still eat the nuts and the seeds, even though those were pretty high. I felt like I could tolerate those more.
So the beans were out. Were anything like the leafy green or the cruciferous family also on that category? What was the stuff that needed to go to heal your gut?
So the broccoli, the cauliflower, all of the nightshades, so like tomatoes, peppers, those kinds of things had to go. Eggplant, which I loved, had to go. So basically, I ate a lot of kale, which I realized was a problem for me a couple of years in. But okay.
narrowing it down, I guess.
Just narrowing, yeah.
And just to pause for a moment for the listener, like, this is when you're have the intestinal permeability and leaky gut syndrome, those symptoms, which are so common, and you're probably dealing with the majority of your clients with some form of gut dysfunction. Yes. So when that's happening, then you become hypersensitive to these natural plant toxins. Lectins is a main category. Gluten is a type of lectin. But it's amazing to hear you talk about how we're going off into the plant community to places where people are like, she had to stop eating broccoli and cauliflower. What the heck's up with that?
Yeah. And it was so bad, Brad, that I had to like curl up in a ball sometimes in the room and just like isolate myself because I was in so much pain that even sound hurt, you know?
A meal or was it just come and go randomly?
Sometimes it was randomly. Sometimes I could pinpoint it. So the 8 years I was keto was like all trial and error, trying to figure out what I could and what I couldn't eat. It was kind of crazy. You know, before even getting to keto, it was crazy because I did, like I said, the Gersons, and then I did, you know, the GAPS. I did all of that, and I was, no matter what I ate, I was having a reaction to.
Do you think this is coming along just due to your age, where you could get away with stuff in your 20s?
And
no.
I would like to say that. It was always there. Would like to say that. It's just, I think it became more prominent when I started paying attention to it. I think it was always that severe, but I just would ignore it. I was kind of like what you said, I accepted it as the norm. I think we all do that too. I think this is how it's going to be. So I'm just going to have to deal with it.
Curl up in a ball once in a while. It's okay. Get a good magazine while you're at it.
It's funny when I look back about it. It's funny now, but not in the moment. Cause you know, the fact that I would think that was normal, there's definitely something going on up here. If that's the thing, right?
That's why these podcasts are great. I mean, I'm referencing, this is only a year ago, Kate, that I kind of put two and two together. I'm like, why am I drinking this thing that blows my stomach out every time? And needing the comment from my wise friend to slap me in the face. And so,
I think it's always something we're always learning things. There's always room for improvement for everything that we do. And there's always something that you can work on.
Always something, including our common sense score. Like, you idiot, why are you doing this if you don't feel, if it doesn't make you feel good? Thank you very much. I'm really working on that myself. Yeah.
It's so hard. And it's always hard to look in within, right? It's always hard for us to kind of critique ourselves and say what is actually wrong. Cause we don't like to admit that stuff. That's being vulnerable. Nobody likes that.
Yeah. I mean, I'm blaming the social and cultural programming too, because
if you're convinced that this food is healthy and you sit down and eat it, chances are you're going to enjoy it more. And it might rip your stomach apart, but you know, there's these things in play when you look at a stalk of broccoli and all the marketing and the messaging behind it. How could this possibly be something that's contributing to, you know, blowing me up? And then conversely, if you are told that red meat is unhealthy, and then you sit down and have to look at a hamburger, it's gonna affect your enjoyment of the food, and like requiring reprogramming in my case. And I'm not gonna step on your toes about your carnivore journey, but that's definitely an element of it, is the challenge to your fixed and rigid beliefs and trying to maintain an open mind.
So you believed that it wasn't good for you. That's funny, because I never got that message. Like, it never sunk into me. I always felt like we needed it. That's why I never
thought it. Millions of people. And, you know, they say, well, you know, I eat chicken and fish, but not red meat. Oh, good for you. Like, I'm three steps up the ladder from someone who's eating red meat. And I had Dr. Kate, we're big fans, Dr. Kate Shanahan on the show, saying,
I love her.
Actually, the fatty acid profile of chicken and pork is vastly inferior to red meat. So if you want to rank the meats, you know, red meat would be a healthier choice in that sense. Oh, mercy.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And I do eat in that way too. I love Kate Shanahan. She's awesome. But yeah, I think, you know, you're right. Society does do that to us too. I never, because we always had meat at our house and liver and stuff like that. But I was always the one that sat on the table until midnight, because I wasn't allowed to get up off the table until I ate it. And I think that's probably a lot where that visceral reaction came from with me too. Like, ooh, I don't want to eat it, because of that kind of scenario was going on. But the texture was more for me why I didn't eat it. So I never told my clients, you know, never eat meat. I never taught, even though I was, you know, vegetarian keto, just taught them how to do it all right. Cause there is a right way to do vegetarian. But not everybody's doing it right. I call them carbitarians. They're just eating carbs. They're not doing, you know, your B12, and they're not doing all the supplementation that they need to do it the right way. So don't get me wrong there. I never told them not to eat meat, but, it was quite the journey, even with the keto, cause trying to figure everything out, what was causing the issues in my stomach. So towards the end, what I was having was, like, you know, those big boxes that you can get of spinach. I would eat that at one sitting. I would kind of, you know, saute it up with avocado oil, and I'd put some olives on top of it, and I'd have like some artichokes, and, you know, I'd have, you know, whatever kind of, I couldn't do any nightshades or anything like that. So it was more like squashes and things that I would put on top of it, you know, like butternut squash and what have you, those kinds of things that were roasted veggies. So that's basically what I ate. That's what I was eating right up until the end.
The end is coming.
The end. So then I was really funny. I had bumped into Sean Baker, Dr. Sean Baker. I can't remember where I bumped into him. And he was talking about carnivore. And I was like, no way. He hasn't eaten just meat. There's no way. And then I started digging into it. And then I bumped into Amber O'Hearn. I started hearing her story. And I was like, huh, okay, this is interesting. And then I heard the Petersons, and I was like, wow, all right, something's up here. And so I started doing a lot of research, and I was like, you know, there is a handful of my clients that are doing what I'm doing. And, you know, there is those clients that are not 100% compliant, and you know who they are. And, but these ones I knew were 100% compliant with what we were working on, and they still were not getting 100% better. So I knew something was missing for them. And I was wondering if this was the missing link. So I started doing a lot of research on it, like 8 months worth. And I was like, you know, I'm going to try it, have them try it. And so I did. And they miraculously got better. And it was almost instantaneously for some of them.
What were they suffering from?
So Crohn's were a couple of them, which, you know, is very debilitating for them. They can't leave the house. You know, a lot of that stuff revolves around their bathroom time. And so one lady came to me, she was crying. She goes, I don't even dare to leave the house, but I don't even, nothing. She did it for 20 years. So it was so odd for her just to get up and go instead of hanging out and waiting. So it totally changed her life, totally changed her life. I've had some people that had IBS. I put my daughter on it who had diverticulosis, put her on that, totally changed her life. It's funny because people laugh that I put her on it first before I did it, because I knew she'd tell me the truth and she'd explain everything that was going on. So I said, okay, well, I normally don't have my clients do things I haven't done, so I guess I'm gonna have to do it.
What was the protocol that you put your daughter on or your clients?
Yeah, so each of them were different depending on how deep they wanted to go. My daughter was 100% strict is what I put her on. My two of the Crohn's, one of them was strict. One of them totally went strict. They were okay with that. And the other one, I just had them do carnivore-ish. So like avocados, they could still have cucumbers. They could still have some of the, like the butternut squash kind of things. If they didn't have a reaction to it, I'd say, okay, you can do that. But we would slowly try things, not try a bunch of things. So they went strict carnivore for 2 weeks, nothing. And then we'd add in an avocado, wait a whole week, see what would happen. Because sometimes it takes a couple days for it to show up.
Right. So you're adding the known to be least offensive plant foods, the ones that have the lowest levels of the anti-nutrients, the antigens that are known to cause problems. And absolutely, avocado would be on that list. I guess a lot of fruit, because yep, fruit's the final offering of the plant. It doesn't have those lectins and toxins that the exactly, the seed and the basic component of the plant has in higher levels. But as far as their menu, did you encourage them to check box on certain aspects of carnivore? Was it freewheeling? You know, did they have to go find fish or whatever they could pick up?
That's a great question. So in that 8 months of research that I was doing, I started talking about nutrient density, and I did put protein in order of nutrient density. So I always told them, you know, stick above the steak line. The steak and above is where we need to thrive in with food. And I can go through that with you in a second. And then the chicken, the pork, and the turkey all at the bottom, you can have that once a week. That's it. You know, nothing more than that.
Wow.
Not a whole lot of nutritional value in there. And not only that, they're not being fed what they need to be eating. And so they're being fed a lot of corn, even though it's organic or grass fed or pasture raised, they're still getting some soy and they're still getting some corn as a supplement in their diet. And granted, yeah, it might be organic, but you're still getting a lot of omega-6s from those. And the omega-6 is what's causing the inflammatory responses in the body. So I tell them, yeah, if you want chicken, you can have it, but just once a week, you know, and make sure that it is organic and it's pasture raised if you're going to eat it. I try and encourage people to eat meat that they can afford. I'm a big believer. I don't eat anything that is not farm raised, grass fed, and organic. That's just my way of coming to carnivore. That's what I agree. That's a path that I made with myself. It has to be a local farm. I have to know that they're happy cows, you know, and they know have to be able to see that they're thriving before I even eat it. To me, that's important. I try and encourage that in my clients.
You see the show Portlandia?
No, I haven't.
You know, it's a popular series on cable, and they were, you know, sitting at this super hip, macrobiotic, you know, sustainable raised restaurant, and the waitress is giving them a big speech about their, you know, where the chicken was raised in a happy pasture and had a great life. And they decided to get up and drive out there and see before ordering. And so this whole, you know, the whole show was, you know, a quick detour to the farm to meet the chicken's family and make sure it was okay. And then they go back to the restaurant and they're like, okay, I'll have the chicken.
That is so funny. I have not heard that. I'll have to check it out. That's great. Yeah, I think to me that's important. And even like with fish, it has to be wild caught, not farm raised. You know, things like that. It's very important for me as going the way that I'm eating now. But I try and encourage my clients to do that, and I give them the education behind it, and then let them decide on their own if that's what they want to do or not. So I had them eating like a variety of things. Like you said, you know, most of the most of the things that we are or that we have interactions with or reactions with are the seed, the stems and sometimes the leaves. So anything that is at the end that's produced some kind of a fruit, like you said, is the lesser of the evil. So I always say go with that if they don't have a reaction.
The seeds, so. The stems and the leaves, did you make that up? Is that kind of a nice rule of thumb to go by?
I've heard it through just by reading a lot of the stuff that is out there for the carnivore that they have released. And I think a lot of it, Dr. Paul Saladino actually references a lot of them, the studies in his book about that stuff too. So I think you think about it, that's the most vulnerable part of the plant. So of course that's where most of the toxins are going to be, so that, they're about procreating just like everybody else. They might be plants, but they're still about, keeping their species going. So they're going to have things in there to protect them. And that's where it's going to mostly be is, in the seeds, because that's the smallest, the most vulnerable part. And then the roots, the stems and the leaves are next. And then after that, it's the fruit. And they want you to eat the fruit. That's why it's colorful. That's why it's pretty. That's why it's tasty, because they'd rather you eat that and leave the rest of the plant so that it can continue on. So it just kind of makes sense in that aspect for me to say it that way. So anything that comes off the plant is what I would suggest to eat. Being a vegetarian keto, we ate like sprouts and seeds and the superfoods.
Yeah. So just to help us reconcile here, this is an indisputable observation that you're sharing. It's not Kate's idea that these plants have bad stuff in them. This it's acknowledged that they have these plant lectins and phytates and things that cause that are literally poisonous. That's why we can't eat something until we soak, sprout, ferment, and render these things less harmful, but of course still there. So we have that as an established baseline. Now, I guess where the confusion or the dispute arises is that, there's some peripheral benefits in terms of the antioxidant response to consuming something that's a poison. And so when you eat a stalk of broccoli and you get the sulforaphane, you can watch Rhonda Patrick on YouTube talk about it for an hour about the amazing scientific benefits and huge antioxidant boost that you get. But I guess on the carnivore side, and Dr. Saladino does a great job, communicating this, that these things can really mess up certain sensitive people. And I assume you can probably contend that there's people that aren't bothered too much by the broccoli and they're not curled up in a ball. And so we kind of have to pick and choose like you've done for your clients.
Absolutely. And I think too, what's interesting is, there are two sides of the coin for a lot of this stuff. We talk about all the benefits for the food, and it's kind of like when you're looking at supplements, there's side effects, right? There's things that have side effects in them. Well, these are what our supplements are coming from. So of course, they're still going to have side effects from them. So we have to take that into consideration too. But what I notice, and I'm sure you've heard this from a lot of other people that are doing carnivore and have talked about carnivore, is when you have a weak immune system or you have something that's bothering it and you're adding these in, it's your body's more susceptible to having these symptoms and these sensitivities to them. So Crohn's is, and so is IBS, and anything that is not normal is considered to be autoimmune. Headaches are, joint pain, those kinds of things that we think is normal is not normal. So these are the ones that I am very, depending on how severe they have the autoimmune, depends on how far we go, is the best way to say that.
So your daughter got going and did well. What happened? When did you pull the trigger?
So I did 2 months after her. She started rapidly losing weight, which is not the key point for her. It was, she had a lot of, and she doesn't mind me sharing this, but she struggled with depression and anxiety since she was a teenager. And then more recently, it was being overweight. So she, it kind of is all connected again because of how she felt about herself, and it just kind of spiraled for her, and she gained a lot of weight and she wasn't happy with herself. So when I had her, I first tried her doing Dr. Anna Kabeka's you know, like the high green keto stuff. Oh my gosh. I wish I could repeat some of the stuff she said, but she goes, pizza never did this to me, is what she said to me. And I was like, okay, well, let's put you on carnivore. And she tried carnivore. It was a night and day for her. She felt better almost instantly. I think 2 months after being on it, I think it was 2 months, she came off all her medications. And she's been doing it for over a year and she's lost over 85 pounds. She looks amazing. She's not totally strict. She's 30 years old. So she's very social. She likes to have drinks now and then. So she's not totally 100%, but she does pay attention to what she is ingesting for alcohol. She tries and gets the stuff that's not made out of grains. You know, she'll do that. She'll also be careful what she puts on her skin. She's careful about what she uses for cleaners in her house. So she's being more aware of all of that stuff. So she's still healing and she's still enjoying it. She loves it. She thinks it's the easiest thing for her. I would have to agree. It's the easiest thing for me too. And it's nice because when they come over, all I have to do is feed them meat too. I don't have to think about anything else because we're all carnivore. Other than my husband's not carnivore, but, so yeah, it's nice that to see her as a mom, see her heal and see the things that she has accomplished just by doing that. Obviously it means a lot to see my clients do it too. And, knowing that they're healing as well, is just obviously a little deeper when it comes to your own kids. Right. So when I saw that happening, I was like, okay, now I have to do it. I have to do it because I'm having my clients do it. And I was only going to do it for 30 days. And then after doing it for the next, very next day, I was surprised. I was like, wow, I don't have any bloating. Nothing. I felt so flat and so light, kind of like when
the one day. So what did you eat?
So
just threw out some steaks and just cooked them up and the sun went down and there you go. You're on board.
I'm on board. And I actually kept my avocados. I was nervous to get rid of my avocados because I'm an athlete, right? And I was like, I know we need some kind of energy and I know protein's not an energy. So I did get the fatty cuts of meat, but I wasn't sure it was going to be enough for the stuff that I was doing. So I kept my avocados for the first month is what I did. So I had 2 avocados a day versus 5 like I used to have. So it was great, you know, having that that one comfort food that I was afraid to let go. It didn't give me any reaction, so I still kept it. So I did that for a month. And then after what I noticed in the month was my headaches were far few between. I was still having a lot of migraines. Those were far few in between. And I noticed that my gums were no longer bleeding and my hair was no longer falling out. So those were like the biggest, which was huge. I mean, I thought I was pretty much healed when I went keto, but no, it was like, wow, those are the things that we've looked at as, oh no, this is normal. This is, you know, you just chalk it off and forget that you even have those issues.
Pick a new hairstyle, I guess. Just go with it.
And then the other thing that I noticed too, was more mental clarity. And when I went keto, I was like, wow, this is amazing. I didn't think I could get more mental clarity.
Right. She was already so wicked smart. You can listen to her podcast. She's just killing it. And now she has more mental clarity.
More and more energy, believe it or not. You know, so it's interesting. So I was like, you know what? I think I'm going to just keep going. So that 30 days, I was saying every 30 days, I just reevaluated. And here we are. 372 days later, I'm still doing it.
So is this the Carnicado, the Kate's Carnicado diet? You still got those avocados coming in?
No, I don't. After the month, I took them out. So after that's when I really started adhering to that nutrient density chart that I had made for my clients. So I put oysters up at the top, raw oysters, and then obviously, you know, the steamed ones underneath it, if that's what some people can't do, raw oysters. And then it's mollusks, anything that, you know, like clams and mussels and things like that are underneath that. And then underneath that would be sardines and your fatty fishes. Those would be, and I'm really cognizant and aware of all the metals that are in the fishes that can, because it's salmon, swordfish, and tuna, right? And those have really high in metal. So I would rather have the sardines. They don't carry as much metal as the larger fish do. So I eat a lot of sardines. And I don't get the ones that are in oil. I do the water ones, packed in water. Underneath that is your organ meats. Those are the next in line. And then underneath that are your eggs, not your egg yolks, not your egg white, but the whole egg. A lot of people are like, oh, there's too much cholesterol in this. There's too much. We need cholesterol, people. We need it. That's how our brain works.
So, what about your prior reactivity to eggs? Is that vanished now because your gut is healed?
Yeah, it's gone. And then underneath that is your meat. So like elk, lamb, beef, bison, all of that is there. And then underneath that is your ground beef. And then underneath that is your turkey, chicken, and pork. So that's the order that I
have. Brutal. This show is sponsored by Wild Turkey Pastures, these wonderful birds that you can make for Thanksgiving. They're the 13th best ranking on Kate's, oh my gosh.
My list, yeah. So,
well, that's beautiful. Is this thing able to be downloaded off your website or something?
I can put it on there. I didn't put it up there yet. We're still kind of playing around with it to see, because I know a lot of people don't, I'm not all about raw, but there are some things in there that you should have raw just to get more of a benefit of the nutrients, you know, like the oysters. If you can do like sushi, that's great. Or sashimi, as they call it, without the rice.
Do my liver raw because Saladino sliced some up for me one time, and they actually tasted better than cooked because I'm not great at cooking it, and I can't say that I love it anyway, even if it's breaded and mixed with sun-dried tomatoes. I'm trying to make it work, but you just barely thawed enough to slice it with a good knife and then salt the heck out of it, and it's like little slices of tri-tip or something. Tastes fine.
I'll have to. So you actually chew it. I would be like this. I would just kind of like plug my nose and swallow
just
it down.
Cut thin little slices and chew it. It doesn't have that offensive back taste that I find offensive when it's gooey, you know, when you're cooking it, and you're not supposed to cook it too much anyway. So I'm eating these medium rare slices of liver and choking it down, but sliced raw liver is a winner with tons of salt.
Okay, I'll have to try that because that's one thing that I struggle with myself is getting in the organ meats, which is why I love Ancestral Supplements, but I end up using their stuff instead. Or I go to eatnosetotail.org, it's nosetotail.org, and it's a grass-fed, grass-finished farm in Texas. Brian Sanders owns it, and he has a patty mix, and that patty mix is beef with heart, liver, kidney, spleen mixed in as a burger. And I will eat it that way. I don't have an issue with that.
Yeah. Turn the Cuisinart on and just drop the liver in there. It's fantastic. Yeah.
That's awesome. And I think that's my next step because it's hard to get that patty mix. Now everybody's ordering it because I talk about it all the time. It's hard to get it now, and I want to get a meat grinder to do that. So I think there are definitely ways to have. I think organ meats are important. I know some carnivores out there don't. They think it's just steak and eggs is fine, and some people have thrived off in that for 10, 15 years. I feel like I need a little more, so I try and incorporate the whole animal instead of just that. I love bone marrow. I like putting it on steak. I love putting it on burgers, you know, things like that. Bone marrow is really good. Bone broth. Love bone broth, you know. So
where's that? Is that on the ranking chart somewhere?
So that would still be with your organ meats and stuff because you're still eating bones, right? So that would still be right up there with the organ meats.
What about things like a plain high fat yogurt or anything else from the cow? It's not part of your carnivore scene.
It's not part of mine, but I encourage people if they want to still do that stuff. I'd like them to leave out the high sugary things. Cause if you have something like that, you still have cravings for other things and other things find their way back in. So, you know, if they want to have something like that, I would say like a goat or sheep milk kind of stuff, if you can. We have a lovely farm here that makes all kinds of raw cheeses out of these different types of milk that you could go and get. You know, I'm sure there's stuff like that online that you can get too that are good. And I always say make sure it's organic because we don't want the hormones. You know, we don't want any of that stuff or the antibiotics. So I always say make sure you get raw and make sure you get organic when you're doing those kind of dairy products. So I'm okay with that if that's what they want to do, but it's not something I feel like us humans should be having. Because we're not cows, we're not baby cows trying to grow up to be strong. That's what that's for. So, you know, and I love cheese. I do. I love cheese. And if I were to have it, it would find its way back in. And I did find that over me doing carnivore that has happened. I'd be like, oh, I'll just have a slice. And the next thing I know, I've eaten it every day of the week. And so it finds its way back in pretty quickly. So I just would rather just stay away from it. So I go through these bouts. It comes in and then it goes away. It goes away for a while and it comes back in. And it's like, no, I shouldn't be eating that.
I guess that's the same for my dark chocolate, which is part of my carnivore-ish pattern. And I don't know. I wonder where that ranks on the plant sensitivity scale. Do you know?
Well, I tend to feel, because it comes from a bean, right? If you're eating the real good dark chocolate, it's coming from a bean. The first ingredient should be cacao bean. I always tell people if they still want to eat chocolate, it should be cacao bean first. And then you shouldn't have any soy or anything in it. It should be, you know, like coconut milk, because that makes everything creamy too. Coconut milk would be the next ingredient. And then, you know, some healthy form of sugar, which for me, I feel like coconut sugar is really healthy for people because it's lower on the glycemic. It doesn't disrupt anything in the gut flora. So coconut sugar is the next best thing. So I always say if you want one or two slices or little chocolate piece, that's fine. It's when you sit there and have a whole bar every day, that's the issue. I know it's pretty high on the lectins and the toxicity of you know, plant matter, because it's a seed is what they're using to make it out. So if it doesn't cause an issue, then I say still have it. You know, you need to have, some people need vices. Some people need something to look forward to. If it's that, some people like coffee. And same thing, it's a bean, right? They're making it out of a bean. And so I feel it's still pretty highly toxic. But if you can have it and it doesn't have an issue, then okay, then have it.
I guess roasting it would probably neutralize some of, I mean, you're not eating a raw coffee bean or a raw cacao bean. So maybe it's been that processing method has helped it with regard to that. But
yeah, and I would have to dig a little more on that to really answer that honestly. So I really don't know, but you would think that would be the case. Absolutely. Yeah.
But just narrowing things down, like you reference with you and your clients and your daughter, is kind of helpful in terms of, you know, willpower, decision fatigue, all these things that cause diets to fall apart. And now if you just put some parameters in place, it seems really easy to adhere to because your high satiety factor in the meals when you're eating these incredibly nutrient dense foods.
Absolutely. And I always tell people too, like eat 8 to 10 ounces of protein. And then if you're still doing these vegetables, have, you know, like a half a cup, no more than a cup, keep it kind of low. And then make sure you have some good fats, you know, and stay away from the seed oils, stay away from those PUFAs that we're all, you know, saying are bad because they are. Stay away from that stuff. So, you know, do the tallow, do the duck fat, do the avocado oil, do the coconut oil, do, you know, ghee. Those are like the best fats that you can have. And you can definitely cook in those, no problem. Even high heat, no problem. But get the fattier cuts of meat and eat the fat. Don't cut it off. Don't throw it away. Eat the fat. That's where all the nutrients is. And I always tell them 8 to 10 ounces. And then if you're still hungry and you want seconds, go for the protein. Don't go for more vegetables. Don't go for more fat. Have more protein. Because I feel we still eat less. We don't eat enough protein still as a human species.
There's been some... plenty of jabbering about the dangers of consuming excess protein over the years. We put some of that stuff in our recent books. And now, as we're tuning in further, it's sort of being downplayed, where it's not such a big deal. You're not going to get cancer if you overstimulate mTOR and IGF-1 with, you know, too many burgers and this crazy carnivore diet. And it's kind of interesting because these nuances are probably... not of big relevance to the average person who's just trying to make good choices and get rid of the crap out of their diet. But for us, you know, living and breathing this stuff and advising clients, it's kind of interesting to think how, you know, these little changes in the message are occurring where, yeah, by the way, you know, the high satiety factor of protein is going to limit you anyway from over consuming it to the point of dangerous, unless you're a freak bodybuilder person who's chugging down
you know, smoothies five times a day, like the golfer, Bryson DeChambeau, hilarious. He put on all this weight. Now he's a big fat guy and he's touting his incredible diet where he has five protein drinks a day. And that's why he's winning tournaments. Like, all right, man, whatever you say, but he's a great golfer. I got to give him that.
Right.
Okay. So we're getting to the anniversary of Kate hitting the carnivore experiment. And a year goes by, you're feeling great, you decide to celebrate.
Yeah, I did. And so it was the beginning of the year. I was on a hike with a couple of women and we were hiking along and they were trying to recruit me to do some running. And I haven't ran in a while. I do my Maffetone training. I love my Maffetone training. It has healed me in so many other ways too. And I was like, yeah, that just doesn't sound good to me. It was a 100-mile relay is what they were going to do. And I was like, yeah, no, I don't want to do that. That doesn't sound fun. It's on the road. If I'm going to run, I'd rather be on trail. And so one of the ladies spoke up and she goes, well, my husband's going to do the Vermont, 200 on the Vermont 100. I said, well, what's that? And she goes, it's a 200-mile bike ride on Vermont 100. It goes north to south of Vermont. It starts at the Canadian border, ends at the Massachusetts border. And I was like, oh, that's interesting. So of course I come home, I immediately look it up. And
what's 100, the highway number or something?
Yes.
Yeah, oh, okay. So you're 100. Doing 200 miles on highway 100.
Yes. and so it was so, I was like, oh, wow, I'm so intrigued with this. And being a newbie to cycling on the road, I had done a couple rides the year prior, nothing big. It was just really fun. You know, just where I live here in New Hampshire, it's really hilly and I just love challenges. And so I was like, oh, when I was looking at that route, I didn't know how to read the route notes very well, apparently. And I thought I was only going to get 9,000 feet in elevation, which sounded, you know, huge to me. And I was like, yeah, 200 plus miles and, you know, 9,000 feet in elevation, sign me up. I want to do this. And so I checked the date. It was in June. And I said, oh, and I started reading the rules and they want you off the road before the sun sets. And I was like, there's no way I have that pace with these guys on that kind of, you know, that early on into my career of cycling. So I said to myself, I'm just going to split it up into 2 days. I'm going to do it on a different day. I'm going to invite some friends to do it with me that I know that would love to do that. So I did. And I started training for it. And into the started training, COVID happened. So two of them lived in Florida. They bowed out. They decided not to do it. And then the one that lived here, she's like, I've never even done a century before. And she goes, so I don't know if I want to do that. And I was like, well, I've never done a century, you know, but I'm training to get there. We have plenty of time to train. And she's like, yeah, no, I don't think I want to do that. So I was like, okay, I guess I'm doing it by myself. I didn't look for anybody else and ask anybody else.
Isn't that always how it happens, people?
Yeah.
When you're throwing down a big challenge, you go out to the restaurant to talk it over. Everybody's hands are in, and then when it comes time, man, people drift away.
They did. They bailed. But I, you know what though? I think it was great. It was perfect how it happened because, as if we talk a little bit about the ride, I don't think I'd have any friends after the first day if they came with me. So I think it worked out perfect. So the day came, I was ready. I talked to Phil Maffetone a couple times in it because I was worried, not knowing what to expect with my body, not having any carbs, doing this kind of thing, and talked about my training, what I had done. And he goes, oh my gosh, you've got this. You have no issue. And I was like, okay, well, good. So I went in with that attitude. Okay. I have no problem. The only thing that I knew I would have a problem with is the mental stuff. Cause the hills, I can only train so much around here with the hills. Those hills are bigger than what we have here. So the first day it was great. My daughter drove me up. I got to spend some time with her. She was my Sherpa. She spent the night with me in the bed and breakfast, and she dropped my stuff off at the next location that I was going to stop at. So I spoke to the ride director a couple weeks prior, and he goes, I think it's great you're stopping in Killington. He goes, that's awesome. He goes, because the rest of the ride from there is brutal, is what he said to me. And he has been putting this ride on since 1985. This ride has been going on, and he's the one that put it on. So I was like, if anybody knows, this is the guy that knows. So I thought that was great. So I left the North Troy, Vermont, got onto 100 and rode. I reached 50 miles I started at 5:30. I reached 50 miles at like it was before 9 o'clock in the morning. And my husband, when I told him where I was, he goes, geez, you should have done the whole thing today. He goes, you're going to finish the whole thing. Well, those were words that kind of came back and bit me in the butt. Because the minute I left that break, it was, I started laughing. I was at this coffee shop filling up with water. And this guy came out. He's like, he was a cyclist. He goes, oh, where are you coming? Where are you going? And so I told him, he goes, oh, you want to miss, when you go around this corner, you want to take the left detour. And he goes, you're going to go down through town. You're going to skip and miss some construction. He says it's like 3 miles construction. And I was like, okay, well, he's a cyclist, so he's probably over exaggerating, because as we usually do, right? So I'm going, I get up to the sign, it's 8 miles of construction. And it was all dirt road. They had milled it down to dirt. And so I rode 8 miles on my road bike. By the end of that 8 miles, my hands were numb, my arms were numb, my feet, my butt, everything was numb. It was crazy. And that was just the beginning. So after that, it was hill after hill after hill, and it was beautiful. So it kind of took away from the pain, just, and it was 80 degrees. The humidity was crazy. It always had a headwind, and I was like looking in the trees. I was like, where's this wind coming from? You know, being a new cyclist, I really didn't understand this headwind thing. And I kept looking in the trees. I was like, where's this wind coming from? Am I going that fast? What's going on here? So I really found out what headwind was that day. So I get into town, this one town, and I had hit over 100 miles. It's like 106 miles. I punched in my Airbnb where I was going the next stop, and it said I had 28 more miles to go. I lost it. I was like, this is 2 o'clock in the afternoon. And I had been on the road since 5:30, and it's hot. There's no shade. And that's when I had the mental breakdown. I was like, okay, you know, you've got to put yourself together. You got to get to where you're going to spend the night and just get there, put your head down and go. So I did. And the climb to Killington was horrendous. I actually thought about calling, because I knew my husband was at the Airbnb. I was going to call him and say, can you come pick me up? And then you can just bring me here in the morning. And then I was like, I don't want to start on a hill.
That's allowed. That's allowed.
Yeah. I figured I could still do that, but I was like, I don't want to start on a hill. It was such, I mean, every corner I went around, there was another hill. So I get there finally. And it was a sweet 6 mile downhill. You know, it was just awesome. After I got up to Killington, it was 6 miles downhill and to the Airbnb. So it was a beautiful ride down. And I get there and I felt amazing, Brad. I did this all on just meat. I haven't had any carbs. And so I ate in the morning before I left, and I hadn't eaten at all during the day. I just wasn't hungry. And
you ate what in the morning?
I had eggs and steak, and I had some crab meat. So I had all three. And I choked it down because I wasn't even hungry. So I forced myself to eat it. So I don't like doing that, because I've always eaten when I'm hungry. I'm an intuitive eater. When my belly grumbles, I eat. And I knew what I was up against that day. So I was like, I got to get some fuel in me. So I've got to eat something. And so I forced myself to eat that. When I got back to the hotel, though, I still wasn't hungry when I got there. I got there about 4:30, took a shower, and my husband and I went into town and looked around and tried to find things, and ended up going back to the hotel and cooking for us. And because I brought my stove, you know, my camp stove and all that stuff. So I cooked for us, and I went to bed at 8 o'clock and woke up at 5 the next morning. And I was like, wow, I feel great. I felt like I could do exactly everything all over again. And I even said to myself, I was like, you're going to prepare yourself to ride another 130 miles in case that happens again. Like the end of, but when I was done at the end of the day, it was 130 some odd miles the first day is what I did. And I had over 7,000 feet in elevation. I was like, this guy said we're only getting 9,000 feet in elevation. And he told me the next day was worse than the first. So I was like, there's no way, you know, I'm going to get just 3,000 feet in elevation. It's not going to happen. So I had to mentally psych myself up for this, because if I am ready for it and I'm prepared for it, I won't have a meltdown like I did the day before. And so yeah, sure enough, I was like, okay, I'm going to prepare myself to do another 130 miles, and I'm going to prepare myself to do, you know, over 7,000 feet in elevation. And it happened to be that. It happened to be another over 7,000 feet in elevation the next day. I also had a 5 to 10 mile per hour wind that was with headed, you know, hitting me. It was wicked windy that day, which was also nice because it was so sunny and there was no shade. So the wind felt great, actually. So I really welcomed the wind. Didn't do well for my average time, though. I think I averaged like 14 miles per hour both days, which was kind of frustrating because I'm usually faster than that. But it was great. It was such an awesome experience. The views were beautiful. I hit all the ski areas. The fact that I could do it without having any carbs and without having any sugar was huge for me. I knew that I could do it physically. I did know I could do it physically. It was just without carbs, could I do it physically? Because we've been told all of our lives as athletes that we need to carb load. We need to have that big bowl of spaghetti the night before. We need to have, the garlic bread with the spaghetti or eat Pop-Tarts in the morning, something along those lines. And I didn't have to do any of that stuff.
So the second day, what did you eat on the bike? And you did another, 70 miles to get to 200, 70 something?
I did. Actually, it was the next day was just over. No, it was longer than a 200 mile ride. It was like 226 or something like that.
So you did almost 100 the next day.
Yeah. Yeah. And again, I read the notes wrong. So David asked me to let him know when I was at a certain time so he could meet me at the end. At the end, there was a 3 mile hike up, and that's where I was going to get 1,000 feet in elevation in 3 miles. And he was going to just kind of hop me with the Jeep, just to keep, because it was at the end of the ride. He wanted me to still be in good spirits. And so he was going to meet me at this Reedsboro Inn, and then I could continue on for 3 miles to the border. So I thought it was 3 miles to the border of Massachusetts. And so I get to Reedsboro Inn. I don't have any cell service. My phone's about to die and he's not there. So I was like, I'm just going to go on for the 3 miles because I want to get it on my Strava. I don't want to lose it. I'm just going to go for 3 miles and then I'll come back down and meet him. So I'm pedaling up this hill and I hear the tires of my Jeep. I was like, okay, he's coming. So I turn around and he's there. And he's like, all right, I've got some ice water for you. He's like, let's plug in your phone, pull over for a little bit. So we plugged in the phone just to give it some more juice.
Yeah, and we need the picture of the sign at Massachusetts. Come on, we need that phone battery.
I'll give you the sign. It was awesome. So here I am, I'm going and he's hopping me, it's great because I don't know where he's going to be. This is like the hardest and the fastest I've pedaled the whole ride because he's there, and I'm like, I know he's waiting for me. Let's just keep going. So next thing I know, I don't see him. Yes, I haven't seen him for a while. It's like, okay, I feel like I've gone 3 miles. I know I've gone more than 3 miles. And I'm pedaling and I'm pedaling. I was like, where's the damn sign? Where's the sign? And I'm just like going and going. And then all of a sudden I see him coming from the other direction. And I look at him, I was like, where's the damn sign? He's like 5 more miles. And I had already gone 5 miles. And I was like, oh, he goes, but it's all downhill. It's all downhill. I was like, okay. So I'm going and there was a little bit of a hill. He like parked at the bottom of it. He's like, this is the only hill, I swear. So went up the hill, got to the sign. It was so fun. I mean, it was fun having him there, but it was so rewarding by the time I got to that sign and knowing what I've done, the mileage that I did that day, the elevation I did that day with the headwind and the wind blowing. It was just, to me, it was an amazing feat that I had accomplished. And it was more mentally for me. That's what I really wanted to accomplish was that. But I also wanted everybody to know we don't need carbs. I don't think we need them at all.
Yeah, you need to be adapted to try something crazy like that. But it's just, it's a miracle, really. And I was talking to you offline and bragging about, I've gone 200 miles a couple times back when we did these crazy rides. But we slammed down so much sugar, it would embarrass the carnival, vendor of the cotton candy, because, that was what our bodies were fueled on. But to do this, I mean, did you have an energy gel in your back pocket in case of emergency, or you're just going for it?
Just going for it.
Cowboy style. My goodness.
Yeah. Well, I did, I did 100 miles here at home. I did 100 miles here at home and it was
on the Peloton.
Yeah. Right. And I think I got like 5,000 feet in elevation. And at that time I used to carry, I carried those, their maple candies that are made with just maple syrup and they're made into hard candies. I had a couple of those with me just in case. When I did that twice, I knew that I didn't eat them after that. So I knew there were stops along the way if I needed to stop somewhere to get something like that. But I knew my body could do it. And I think it helps, you know, Phil told me, he's like, oh, you got this. There's no problem. I think that helped me a lot. It was just the mental challenge of the hills was what, cause I'm new to cycling and I didn't know like what I was supposed to expect out there either. The headwind was crazy. I've never experienced that before. And, you know, it was amazing though, Brett. I have to tell you, I skipped over this. There were people hooting and hollering, saying, you've got this. I mean, like, obviously this is a well-known ride. A lot of people do it. They were hanging out the window, cheering me on, saying, you're doing awesome. You've got this. You're almost to the top. I mean, all that, they were just constantly, I've never experienced something like that. It was like I was on a race is what I felt like. It was great.
Wow. Love it, yeah. Kate. What a great way to celebrate your your carnivore journey. And thanks for those details, especially the ranking chart. I think you got to blow that into a PDF and we'll be rocking and rolling. It could be a sensation. Except for the chicken and pork, they'll probably send you a letter, from their legal counsel. Like, how dare you rank us at the bottom of the barrel? Right, oh, mercy. Right. So tell us how we can find your podcast and your nutrition coaching service.
Oh, thank you, Brad. Yeah. So all the handles on social media, as well as my podcast and my website is
200milecarnivorechick.com.
You know what? I should change it to that. It's K8 for wellness. It's the letter K, the number 8, the number 4 wellness is how you can find me on all social media and my website and the podcast as well. Too.
You could fit that on a license plate. It's so tight, right? With all the abbreviations, or text it to people. I love it.
I never thought of the license plate. I should do that. I'll start putting it on my cycling jersey too.
K8 42 200. Boom.
There you go.
220 or whatever the final number was. And then people say, what does that license plate mean? You go, well, I just rode from Canada to freaking Massachusetts. Oh, what kind of food did you eat? Oh, nothing. Come on now. Tell the truth. All right. Kate,
Matt
Kretzinger, what a great show and a great achievement. Thanks for, healing those people. And your daughter's story is wonderful. And I think people have a lot to think about for this one. So.
Yeah. Well, thank you for having me. Thank you for letting me share. It was such a great journey. So I appreciate that. Thank you.
Da, 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 da.
Thank you for listening to the show. We would love your feedback at getoveryourselfpodcast@gmail.com. And we would also love if you could leave a rating and a review on iTunes or wherever you listen to podcasts. I know it's a hassle. You have to go to desktop iTunes, click on the tab that says ratings and reviews, and then click to rate the show anywhere from 5 to 5 stars. And it really helps spread the word so more people can find the show and get over themselves because they need to. Thanks for doing it.